Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
We've enjoyed the last two Monday shows talking about episodes 1 and 2, the first ones that were done a couple of weeks ago, episodes 3 and 4 this past Sunday here on the show, The Last Dance on ESPN, a guy that was in Chicago for a long time covering all things Chicago, including the Bulls. The host of Unmuted Podcast, Jay Mariotti, is on the line with us. Jay, how you doing? Good morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, and I hope everybody is staying safe today.
Yes, we are certainly trying to do our part here in Nashville. I would love to get your thoughts because you certainly had a much closer view. We were much farther away. That you were right in the middle of that. What have you thought through four episodes?
Well, the magnitude and the scope of this remain immense. I mean, it's hard to wrap my head around it, and this is 22 years old. But, guys, I'm happy that millennials, younger people, are finally seeing what I got to live for 8 years. Because I've heard nothing in the last few years other than LeBron has eclipsed Michael Jordan. And it kind of pains me to hear that because I don't think people who just make that blanket statement realize some of the obstacles that Jordan went through. And now you're starting to see it. He had a general manager who was sabotaging him. He had an owner who did not want to pay him, Pippen, Phil Jackson. And you had this dysfunction. So many dynasties in sports, the Lakers going back to Showtime with Jerry Buss as the owner. And I could name you five or six. The owner and the GM would sit back and enjoy it, and people would get along, and they would be rewarded financially, not the Bulls. And this was the dysfunction that ended up killing this thing before its time. And I think the director, Jason Herrera, has done a wonderful job here of presenting that. We're only four episodes in, and I think people now realize it wasn't just Michael, but these very diverse and rich characters, Pippen, Dennis, Phil Jackson. It's almost miraculous when you think about these personalities that they were able to win a three-peat originally and then reboot it with Dennis Rodman and win another one. Watching this right now, I'm still blown away by it.
Yeah. Something we've talked the last couple weeks about, just because we've also been covering this for a long time and understand the dynamic of, you know, front offices to athletes and agents and everything. We've been talking, can you imagine today if there were, I've been blown away at just, yes, Jerry Krause deserves a ton of this. I get it. But I just have never seen athletes, you know, treat someone, a general manager, president and a general manager, the way that they did behind the scenes. It's amazing to me to watch how they talked to the guy who signs their paychecks.
Well, technically the guy who signed
their paychecks. Well, I guess that's the owner,
right,
yeah.
But I know what you're getting at. And my question, and I've done several interviews the last couple of weeks, where the hell was Jerry Reinsdorf in all of this?
Yeah.
Both ways, by the way. If Phil Jackson and his agent ran across a belligerent Krause every summer when it came time for a new contract, well, then Reinsdorf has to step in and say, you know, we've got a great thing here, Jerry. We're going to give Phil his contract. Nope. Reinsdorf stood in the background. Same goes other way around. Reinsdorf had to know because we all knew that this mocking of Jerry Krause was going on, that they completely made fun of him, not only Michael and Scotty, but it spread down to other players on the team. Krause was mocked. He was a short man. He was overweight. He was easy to mock, but you're absolutely right here. How was this allowed to happen? I don't know how many times I wrote columns saying, where is Reinsdorf? Oh, he would show up with his cigar when they won a championship. You'd see him right there with Bob Costas every time. But he allowed this to happen. He enabled the dysfunction. And you see this often with his other team, the Chicago White Sox. So not enough so far has been devoted to Reinsdorf in this. And, you know, we do have six more episodes. Let's see where it goes. But that's the point I hit on every time, what you just said. it's shocking this was allowed to happen, and it certainly would not happen today.
Obviously, Jerry Krause is not here to defend himself or to speak on this. So you were around him. What? Why do you think he just could? It wasn't enough just to be a dynasty. It wasn't just enough to win championships. Why did he? Why was he always looking for more of the attention? I guess for us outsiders, it's hard to understand why he just couldn't go along and be. He was getting praise for certain draft picks and certain moves. Why was that not enough? You knew him better than us, obviously.
Well, he was a private guy and he had his people. I remember a prominent Boston writer who I did TV with told me, "I'm a Jerry guy." And I said, "What does that mean exactly?" He said, "I go way back with Jerry." I said, "What are you trying to tell me?" And he said, "Well, he doesn't like you." I said, "Well, I don't really care if he likes me or not. A lot of people don't like me, and a lot of people don't like him. It's my job. It's his job." Krause had these little networks of people, and it was almost a double secret probation kind of thing. It was just creepy. And you're right. We have to remind everybody that Jerry passed three years ago, and it's a shame he didn't have an opportunity to speak his mind in this documentary. I mean, he wasn't a bad guy. He was just a secret guy who would operate behind the scenes. He thought he knew more than everybody else knew. Tim Floyd comes out last week on a station in Louisiana and says, "Jerry Krause had been recruiting me since 1988 for this job." These guys had daily dialogue throughout the dynasty. Tim Floyd and Jerry Krause. Krause thought he was the smartest guy in the world, and "I'm going to bring in Tim Floyd at some point, and he's going to continue what we've already built." It was never enough for him. He found Phil Jackson in the minor leagues of basketball coaching in Albany, New York. Jerry Krause felt that Phil Jackson through the years did not appreciate what Jerry did for him. I'm sure that Phil Jackson thanked him countless times, but I think Jerry Krause wanted that voiced publicly. Instead, Phil had to deal with Michael being underpaid, Scotty being underpaid, and he took their side because, face it, he's the coach. He needs to win championships, and it became this ridiculous rebellion. These three guys over here, these two guys over here, and it's shocking to me they were able to win championships through all of this. And, again, that's where the director so far has done his best work in showing this gulf between ownership and these Hall of Famers.
We're talking to Jay Mariotti, who is longtime columnist in Chicago during this run. You've seen him on ESPN as a television commentator for many years. And, Jay, take me back to the time where the Bulls were trying to build to the point where they could beat the Pistons. I thought that was a fascinating part of it because thinking back to it, I really admired that they really had to earn it. In retrospect, it seems easy. Yeah, it was inevitable. With Michael Jordan, they were going to start to win. They would win a championship eventually. But there was a long time where you wondered if they had that rap, can't win the big one kind of thing. Take me back to when you were covering it. Do you think it was inevitable, or did you have your doubts that they could ever climb the full mountain?
Well, the question at the time was the Bad Boys. Were they going to thug themselves out of a dynasty? And I think that kind of happened. They got old in Detroit, but they won a couple. And it really came down to whether Michael Jordan, and this is where Krause did a great job, and always should be respected for this, Krause made the controversial call that we've got to get Doug Collins out of here because it's just too Michael Jordan-centric, and we need to bring in a coach who can develop Scotty, maximize this entire roster, Horace Grant, and turn it into a team production. Krause was correct. He stepped out. He got rid of Collins. Michael didn't like it. You're seeing that in the docuseries, but it worked. And it was bizarre to see Phil Jackson conducting yoga sessions and giving books to the players and some of them just throwing the books out, but it worked. And that's where Krause has to be commended to this day. But so does Phil Jackson. Everybody says, "Oh, it's easy to inherit Michael Jordan." No, they were stumbling. They were losing to the Pistons. They also needed to toughen up. While the Pistons, Bill Laimbeer and Rick Mahorn and these guys were literally waging combat sports in the postseason. The Bulls, you saw in the videos, they were kind of wiry. They were athletic. They needed to bulk up themselves and stand down to these guys. And they finally did. They got to it in the weight room. You saw a bigger Jordan. He wasn't pushed around so easily by the Jordan rules. And ultimately, the Pistons self-destructed in that sweep. And what's amazing to me, guys, is in the last 48 hours, this crossfire continues between Isaiah and Michael and Horace Grant and Lambeer. They're just firing back and forth. What, we're 30 years later, these guys are still fighting. We should bring them onto some sort of a Skype thing right now and let them go to war on Skype. We'll all watch it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we would, no question. Jay Mariotti with us. And so, Jay, how did you cover the Jordan rules when it was going on? Did you think the Bulls were being treated unfairly, or was it so natural for the Pistons to play that way that it wasn't a big deal? How did you cover that dynamic? Because they really get into that in the documentary.
Yeah, I thought the Pistons were too dirty. And I think a lot of basketball purists would say, nah, that's the way the game should be played. No, I thought the Pistons were thugs. And the funny thing was I started my career way back in Detroit. So I become an enemy in Detroit while I'm working in Chicago. Of course, Isaiah Thomas, who grew up in Chicago, became an enemy in Chicago. That's one of the reasons why Isaiah, to this day, by the way, is still hurt, because when he goes back to his hometown, he is truly a pariah. How did I cover it? You let that story come to you. There has been nothing like it. It wasn't just covering the global celebrity of Michael Jordan and following him around the world, but the layers that kept coming at you. The management wouldn't pay Scotty. Management wouldn't pay Phil. And then here comes Dennis Rodman in the party. It's coming at you from all directions. You're loving it because you know you will never, ever cover anything like this again, and that's been true. That said, this should have been portrayed as a joyful, exhilarating experience from top to bottom. It was anything but. It was fraught with peril, with Dennis. You never knew when Dennis was going to split and show up drunk at practice. And yet, somehow, they all made it work because Scotty and Michael understood, if we don't have Dennis Rodman rebounding, playing defense, we're not going to win a championship. So they put up with a lot. You saw him. They let him go to load management and with Carmen Electra for four nights. The whole thing, looking back at this, Dennis shows up in a feather boa. He gets married one Saturday in downtown Chicago. It was not just covering a sports dynasty. This was the ultimate in pop culture in the 90s. It brought in Madonna for a period of time. My head is still spinning from it. I loved every minute of it, but I got to tell you, it did not have to end the way it did. I think they had at least one or two titles left in them, and for that you can blame the owner and the general manager, because they thought, well, we're going to start our own dynasty, and guys, you've seen how that has gone in Chicago. They're barely a you know, they're not even a respectable franchise right now. They are a lower rung NBA franchise, really nondescript and going nowhere.
Jay, we've enjoyed getting to know Will Perdue over the years. His Vanderbilt ties, of course. There's some great perspective by some secondary characters throughout this. At the time, did you have a guy or two? Who were the most interesting people to talk to who were not in the limelight, that were watching this whole thing, a part of the whole thing, but not in the spotlight?
Well, it's funny. Will Perdue, who is now a commentator, Bill Wennington, who is now a commentator, and Steve Kerr, who became a commentator, now a championship coach of the Warriors. These guys, and there were others, because of Michael Jordan and being there, if those three guys had been on another franchise somewhere, the Atlanta Hawks, I don't know if we ever would have seen them get into this second life as broadcasters. They were all personable people, and sure, you have the national media pouring in for a playoff series, and you have a media session, and there are 200 people around Jordan, there are 50 around Pippen, and 70 around Phil. Of course an intrepid reporter is going to go over to a Will Perdue or a Bill Wennington or a Steve Kerr, and you found out that they had a lot to say. I used to do this little thing, the Jordan tax. who has benefited the most from being in the presence of Michael Jordan? And I figured this out one day, and I would say Reinsdorf would be right up there, obviously, the way his the value of his franchises has just multiplied through the years. But I would say Steve Kerr, of everybody. If Steve Kerr shows up in Chicago, he had been cut, I believe, by the Orlando Magic, brought in to replace John Paxson as a spot-up shooter. And you've seen since then how Steve Kerr has become a Hall of Famer, not because of anything he did on the court, but off the court. He was a brilliant broadcaster for TNT, and now he's a three-time championship coach with the Warriors, who probably someday will coach the U.S. Olympic team. So I'm glad you brought that up, because there were these characters on the side of this that ended up sprouting because they were part of the Jordan story.
Jay Mariotti is with us talking The Last Dance, and they've shown at times the gambling side of Michael Jordan. We've seen it on the plane, a couple of clips of that. But during the time, and it's not as taboo anymore to talk about, but how well was it known in media circles of, you know, his gambling and everything that he was a part of? Was that something that was discussed back then, or how much did it really come up?
Well, it came up a lot in 93. 93 was a season that remains hazy. In that period of time, Michael was getting tired of the spotlight, but he was also gambling, and he almost defiantly so. And he didn't try to hide it. During a playoff series in New York, he ran down to Atlantic City, and Dave Anderson of the New York Times wrote about it, and all of a sudden, we're coming off the heels of the Pete Rose gambling scandal, and my God, Michael Jordan, there are similarities in their competitiveness. Rose, who I covered at one point, and Jordan, I could see the similarities. Michael had to be part of the action. It was a competitive thirst that I think went way beyond that. I think he had a gambling problem. And I wasn't alone. And a book is written by some scumbag named Richard Esquinas, who wrote an entire book about taking Michael's money on the golf course. And Michael did not deny it. In North Carolina, a bail bondsman was found dead one day with three of Jordan's checks in his briefcase. This is all going on in 92 and 93 when Jordan mania is starting to take off around the world. Oh, yeah. I wanted to write it because it's a story. Yet I had publishers and editors who were in business bed with Jordan, the Bulls. I mean, just think about it, Chicago at the time. So it was difficult for any journalist to actually try to probe this. Well, you saw what happened ultimately. The NBA decides to investigate after their third title. Jordan, furious about the NBA investigation, I go out to see him one day at a golf club. He's whipping ice cubes at me. He doesn't want to talk about it. And then his father is murdered. And then shortly after that, Michael shows up at Comiskey Park throwing out a first pitch, and he's announcing he's going to play baseball. I will never tell anybody to connect the dots. That is not fair. That's not responsible. But if you take those events in a sequence, to this day, I'm wondering, did the NBA truly investigate Michael Jordan the way baseball investigated Pete Rose? Answer, no way. I'm not saying that David Stern didn't look into it, but at that time, how the NBA was booming, Jordan was the golden goose. Do we really think any commissioner would want to run him out of the sport? No. So those are the unanswered questions. So far in this docuseries, we have seen four terrific episodes. Jason Ehrer has said, I have asked Michael about the gambling. I have asked Michael about his father's murder. Look, guys, Michael was the executive producer of this. He approved the project, and he's approving all the editorial content. So my guess is, no, we're not going to have any revelations here. But you asked me the question. Yes, I think to this day we're wondering, that was one hellish year in 1993. What happened?
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of alluded to this earlier in the interview, but if history changed, what does it look like if Phil does stay and Jerry Krause doesn't run him off? Do we think we're talking about the Lakers with five championships, or Does it go to the Bulls maybe making this dynasty even greater than it already was?
Oh, I think it would have been greater. I think if you had had another owner and another general manager and Michael Jordan was there, somehow Michael Jordan would have had a dynasty. Krause did good work finding Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant and daring to bring in Dennis Rodman. But it may have taken different turns with, say, Jerry West had been running the Bulls. You don't think they would have won six championships? Jerry West would have done it a different way. And if Jerry Buss had been the owner, yes, they would have loved life, paid everybody. They would have opened up their own little forum club in Chicago so everybody could party. And it would be a beautiful thing. And I think it may have, might have been uninterrupted. I'm not so sure Jordan goes to play baseball. I'm not so sure. In fact, I know it wouldn't have been wrecking balled after the sixth title. They would have kept going on and on. What dynasty do you know of that doesn't try to exhaust it? The Pistons tried. We've seen several others through time. You run it through until it runs its course. Who decides we're ending it here and we're going to start a new one? It's a recipe for disaster because the Bulls have never even gotten started on a new dynasty. So, to answer your question, I believe that it would have taken different and even better turns if you had not had these two guys running the franchise.
Okay, Jay, let's end with this. Let's go on the flip side. We had this discussion yesterday, hot and heavy, on the show. What would the Bulls have looked like if they just would have remained the same? What if Doug Collins would have remained the coach? How do you think it would have played out if Doug Collins would have remained the coach through all of this?
I think it would have been a one-man show. I think Scottie Pippen would not have developed, and I'm not so sure.
Do they break through?
Michael Jordan may have willed a championship at some point, but I think it would have devolved into frustration. Now, I could have named you several other coaches at the time who would have won a championship, but Doug was really young in his career. I think a good question would be, if you had taken Doug Collins 15 years later, the mature Doug Collins, who ended up becoming a great broadcaster himself, who ended up coaching in the NBA, if you had taken a more mature Doug, would they have maybe won? Yeah, I think that's a good question. But at the time, Collins was not prepared to do anything but give Michael Jordan the ball and get out of the way. That's not a recipe for winning a championship. And maybe it would have been an Allen Iverson deal. But I could name you 10 situations in NBA history with one dominant superstar who can't win a championship. That's, I think, what it was in danger of becoming had they not found a team-focused coach such as Phil.
Wow, well said and good stuff. Jay, really appreciate it. Check out his podcast, Unmuted. Have you been enjoying doing that?
Yeah, it's a blast. You don't have people telling you what to say. I hope you guys have terrific bosses who let you fly and do what you want. But sometimes in this business, you want to say things and bosses don't want you to because of advertisers or whatever. The podcast is beautiful because I produce it. It's a lot like Michael Jordan. You know, he can present whatever he wants in this documentary. Well, I can present anything I can in this podcast. So
All right. It's
cool. I enjoy it. And the problem is there's about a million of them right now, and it's hard to differentiate. But it's cool. I like it.
Well, hey, appreciate the visit. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Take care.
All right, that is Jay Mariotti, host of Unmuted Podcast. A lot to digest right there. He was a longtime columnist in Chicago, and you can understand why his podcast is called Unmuted. If you're familiar with Jay's work, he worked at ESPN for a long time as well. So we'll get into all that on the other side to wrap up hour number one. Don't forget Isaiah Wilson, the first round pick by the Titans to kick off hour number two, the big tackle from Georgia. More of Darren Donick and Chase next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.